float like a butterfly and sting like a bee.
The Mirror brings you After the Bell in association with Betfair.
Hello and welcome to After the Bell, Mirror Fighting's boxing show in association with Betfair. Please do give us a thumbs up, subscribe, leave a rating however you're watching or listening to the show. I'm Martin Dorman, joined by George Groves and Declan Taylor. Once again, this week we're going to take a look back at Friday night's show from Mexico, in which Juan Francisco Estrada and Roman Gonzalez set up a rematch 8 years in the making with their respective wins. And then we'll look ahead to heavyweight showdown between Derek Chisora and Oleksandr Usyk, much anticipated, much delayed. And I'm sure we'll find time for a rant or two along the way. Gents, how are you this week?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Not too bad.
No complaints. Listen, there is a lot of uncertainty in the world right now, but one thing that has been consistent for a long time is that the elite super flyweights always deliver. Little stat for you. Roman Gonzalez, Juan Francisco Estrada, Carlos Cuadras and Saur Rungvisai have fought each other 9 times over the last 8 years. In a sort of unofficial round robin, if you like. And I would be hesitant to say that any of those fights didn't deliver. And again, on Friday, Juan Estrada took on Carlos Cuadras in a rematch. And again, fight of the year candidate, Declan. Estrada down in the third, Cuadras down twice in the 11th before it was stopped. And, you know, I don't know why these smaller guys, obviously the best of the smaller guys, but once again, another good fight.
Yeah, they're obviously both super fly, but they're also both Mexican. So I think that was that has something to play in that one. But yeah, incredible fight again. And like you say, any combination of any of those guys seems to be thrilling every time. It's funny as well, you mentioned about the super fly, because it sort of felt a bit that Roman Gonzalez had maybe taken a step too far, because obviously he won his title against Cuadras a few years ago now, but looked like maybe that was a bit too much for him, a bit too heavy for him. And then he lost twice to Saur Rungvisai, the second of which was really bad, you know, bad knockout. And he's rebuilt, a bit like Manny Pacquiao when he got knocked out by Chavez, and he sort of rebuilt and came back, had a renaissance. That's kind of what he's doing now. And then in with Estrada and Cuadras, and Saur Rungvisai still hanging around. It's just incredible fight after incredible fight. And now what we're looking for, hopefully, is the rematch, finally, of Estrada and Chocolatito, which is, I think, next month is 8 years since they last fought down at flyweight or light fly. So, you know, they've both gone up. They both rebuilt. You know, both had trials and tribulations, really. Now on a massive high, and it couldn't come at a better time. And you know, for so long, these little guys never got any attention, or at least that's what everyone says. And finally, boxing fans think and realise that it's arguably the best division in the sport right now, and has been for the last few years, really.
As George, as Declan says, they don't often get the attention they may well deserve. Is there possibly something in the fact that because of that, there's maybe less demands from them for more money. Maybe they're a little bit less protective of their record, so they're more likely to fight each other. Once you've kind of gone around once and you've won some, lost some, why not just keep going?
Definitely. Obviously, usually at the smaller guys, there are limited numbers as well at the high end, just because, you know, there's fewer fighters at that size. They are always predominantly Mexican or you know, Eastern countries. So the money won't be there the same for them. So they have to go into the big fights and roll the dice and sometimes come unstuck, but know that they'll come again. And usually these guys, that their careers might not last particularly long. You know, they might be past their best in their mid-20s, you know, late 20s, and then they're wrapping up. But looking at some of the ages, like, you know, Gonzalez now 33, Estrada's in his 30s. So and these guys are probably coming into their best. It might have taken them a little while to settle now into this heavier division, even though to someone like me, it's like light fly, super fly. You know, I can't tell the difference between them. But you do naturally, obviously, as you mature and you get older, you get heavier. And that's why these guys are doing so well now at the heavier weight division for them. But it's all action, isn't it, in the smaller weight classes, that, you know, they have to earn their money, really, in that respect. They have to be entertaining. they're all big punchers down there, but their punch absorption rate, you know, the way that they can take and ride a shot, and their conditioning is a huge factor, so that, you know, these guys get off the get off the canvas and usually get to the end of the fight. And then from Friday night, Strider took him to the 11th round to get the finish, and even then, the finish, you know, he was stopped on his feet. So
yeah, Quadra still swinging, wasn't he? He was still swinging when he was,
you know,
super.
And it's, if you're a boxing fan, like the smaller weight divisions are the one for you, I think, you know, because you will get all action. You have to really zone in and tune in to pick up on the subtleties of the elite level fighters and the stuff that they're doing and the defensive moves that they're pulling off and how they're setting stuff up, because there's so much volume, it kind of is a bit distracting. But it's awesome. It's awesome. You learn so much if you want to be a fighter yourself, to study the lighter weight classes, because there's so much more on offer. It's a great division at the moment.
I will just point out that if you were trying to watch the fight in the UK, you probably had some difficulty. It was a Matchroom USA show, but not picked up by anybody over here, as far
as
I'm aware.
Let's not get into that again.
No, but, you know, we've got to be consistent. Got to be consistent. Yeah. I mean, I obviously, the Estrada-Gonzalez rematch is all but made, but I don't know if the World Boxing Super Series are looking at the situation thinking it's almost a ready-made tournament. You've got these four guys. You could definitely, I'm sure, find four more, maybe the next generation, if you like, and put them all together.
Yeah, they. I remember this one after the first season, and they were sort of scouting around looking for the best weight classes, obviously Superfly at the time. And I remember, what's his name, the promoter with Golovkin, Tom Loeffler. Mm-hmm. He put on a card called Superfly, and it was great, and it was, you know, really, really good and well received. It looked like an obvious choice, and I don't know why it didn't happen. I guess maybe they wanted too much money, or there was already contractual stuff with big fights with Sorung Vasai and whatever else, but it didn't happen. But yeah, that would be brilliant. But I guess, yeah, they'll go into the Estrada Chocolatito rematch pretty quickly, and I would think if Gonzalez was to lose that, which they haven't generated odds for it yet, but I would think that he's going to be an underdog in that fight. If he was to lose that, that might be the end of him. So maybe a tournament might be attractive to him in that sense, because there'll be like stages, and this is how much money you're going to get, and this is how many fights you want you for, and then you can retire if you want, sort of thing. Hopefully they do that. But it, like George said, it doesn't seem as if there's any problem making these fights, actually. So, you know, when we talked about heavyweights and stuff, the problem is they can't really make a lot of the big fights that we want for whatever reason. Whereas them guys, they're up for it because they haven't really got any other options. But yeah, hopefully it'll be made pretty soon. And next, like, it's a good old school way of building a fight, isn't it? Having both guys on the same card, both winning. That always works well. And it worked perfectly because that was vintage Gonzalez. Didn't get the stoppage, but just the way he pressured and just his little subtle movements on the inside just to take the heat off the shots and then respond. But I think when he's in with Estrada again, slightly younger, slightly fresher, more powerful, I think he'll wear him down. He'll get water in the basement, as they say, and that'll be too much for Chocolatito, and he'll lose that rematch. But who knows? That's why it's such a good one.
Yeah. And just also on that card, maybe a super flyweight in the future, but at the moment, flyweight, Julio Cesar Martinez defended his world title. A second round stoppage of Moises Calleiros. I mean, I'll be honest, Calleiros came in 6 pounds overweight, having been a replacement late on. An argument really just to scrap the fight completely. The guy clearly wasn't going to make... I mean, if you're 6 pounds over on the scales, earlier in the week, I'm going to assume you were heavier than that. An argument maybe that the fight shouldn't have taken place, but Martinez, 25 years old, one definitely to look out for.
Yeah, I mean, Eddie Hearn says a lot of stuff, but he tweeted one of the most exciting young fighters on the planet, and it's hard to disagree with him. And it's funny because he's a bit less, you know, George spoke about the subtleties and the volume and stuff like that. He boxes a little bit more like a heavier guy, where he plants his feet and he just looks for heavy shots. And the stoppage was, okay, yeah, they're caveats because the guy was overweight, not in his league, but... yeah, he looks vast for the weight. He's obviously going to go up. Maybe he'll stick about for a bit of flyweight and unify. That would be a good idea. Before he goes up, maybe let Estrada and Chocolatito work out who's the man between those two and then move up and fight one of them. But he looks really good. Kind of basic is the wrong word, but that rudimentary style, you know, double jab, big backhands, left hooks to the body, stuff like that. Nothing flashy, but super powerful, really, like Eddie Hearn says, exciting to watch. And yeah, you've got to agree with him on that too.
Yeah, reluctantly, we'll agree on that. Okay, let's look forward to Halloween. I'm going to get out of the way. It is Fright Night. No, I said it. Sorry. Alexander Usyk, Derek Chisora, of course, much delayed. But the longer it's gone on, the more I've sort of bought into the fight. I suspect a lot of that's got to do with David Haye, who just loves
Derek.
To...
Derek!
Sorry, I had to do it.
If you only listen to David Haye, you believe Derek Chisora is going to blow Usyk away. But in all seriousness, a very solid test for Usyk in just his second heavyweight fight, George.
Yeah, no, it is. It is. And Usyk, like one of my favourite fighters. So I try to delve in a little bit and look at what would he be up against here. He didn't look awesome in his first heavyweight outing against Chaz Witherspoon, but I don't think he needed to. Do you know what I mean? It was just figuring stuff out. He's definitely a cruiserweight who's moved up to heavyweight. So he's going to give away a bit of natural size. But against someone like Derek Chisora, I don't think that's going to be a huge problem for him. Both haven't boxed for a year, which I thought maybe that'd be a problem for Usyk. But Usyk's been a pro now for 7 years, which surprised me. And he's only had 17 fights. So he's used to having a bit of gap in between each fight. Obviously, having his stablemate Lomachenko get beat, you know, a week, two weeks ago now, or will be 2 weeks, would have been probably a big downer for him in the camp. I know they're so close, but and how much of that will affect the final stages of his camp. But I think Usyk just runs rings around Chisora. Chisora now lately, since he's changed trainer, and he works with a lot of the MMA fighters out of London, I think the London Shoot Fighters, and training at David Haye's gym, it conditioning seems to be a big part of his game. He's only 36 himself. Like, yeah, I felt like he feels like much older than that, Chisora, but 36 and great engine. He'll just have to swarm and try and gas out Usyk, I feel, who will just be so smart in terms of like the heavyweight division. When it comes to ability, you know, there ain't that many guys out there in terms of, you know, their boxing ability, the stuff they can do. It's usually who's the biggest, who's the strongest, who's the most powerful, and who can land them powerful shots. But I think it's an exciting fight. It's definitely a really exciting fight. I think Usyk's a favourite. I can't see how Chisora wins this fight, but you never know. Like, you never know. It's not the upset that I predicted, that I missed last week's show. I couldn't have come on and basked in that glory of Lomachenko coming unstuck. But at the same time, I haven't bought into David Haye, mindset that this he can't comprehend why Usyk has chosen Chisora. I know why he's chosen Chisora. I think because he beats him.
And not only beats him, Derek, but looks good against him, presumably.
Well, I mean, I'm the same as you, whereas that when the fight was made, I was a little bit, you know, a little bit meh about it. There was a lot of sort of chat and people calling for it and stuff. And I was thinking, well, I don't really know why this is so exciting, but I've bought into it massively since it's been made. I'm not changing my prediction from an Usyk win, but I kind of can see where he could have a few problems in the fight. If you listen to David Haye as well, he does talk a lot, even long before his association with Chisora, he's spoken a lot about how hard it is moving up from cruiserweight to heavyweight. Maybe they should make a new weight division in between. No, I'm joking. he said that, you know, you could be a really good cruiser, elite cruiser, and then any heavyweight that catches you, you're like, whoa, this is a big old bloke. Like, whether they're in your league or not, you really notice the difference. Chisora, boxing-wise, obviously is not in Usyk's class, but he does get hit a bit, Usyk. It's not like he's Pernell Whitaker or something. He's not super elusive. He's actually there to get hit. Bellew caught him a lot. barely won a few rounds at the first in that, you know, in the first half of that fight before he got stopped. And if Chisora is super fit and well conditioned, and it depends what Chisora turns up. I remember the Fury rematch when he really lost badly that night. He just said like his legs didn't work and he just wasn't right on the night. He was poor against Ajit Kabayel, didn't have a good night against Pulev. So, you know, he does blow hot and cold. If a really good Chisora turns up, you know, like we saw against Takam, I mean, again, he lost a few rounds there. He was well behind and then he stopped Takam. I mean, who does that? Not many people. So he does punch hard. I don't fancy him to win, but I think he could have his moments. I think Usyk maybe could get tagged a couple times, but will come through to win. And I think Dave Allen gave us some good insight on the sparring. Allen's obviously sparred everyone, Joshua, Fury, all the top heavyweights, done hundreds of rounds with all of them. And he says that Usyk maybe is the best he's ever been in with. He didn't say, oh yeah, he seems small though, I could hit him a lot and he doesn't like a shot. But he didn't say that. He's boxed big guys in the WSB, for instance, like Joe Joyce, he boxed him. So I don't think he'll have a massive problem, but I do think there's going to be some moments where Chisora catches him. And then who knows, it's a big guy. All you need is to be stunned momentarily and then get a big right hand behind it and it's all over. So I'm much more excited about this fight than I have been. Maybe I've bought into the hype. Maybe I've been absolutely sucker punched by it, like a lot of people will have been. A lot of conversation about whether this is a pay-per-view fight / card. It is. You got to pay for it if you want to see it. I think it's going to be an interesting, exciting fight. And I think it's a good one for Usyk at this stage in his heavyweight career.
I think that's the point. Even if we, in a week's time, look back and think, yeah, of course, what happened was going to happen and Usyk dominated. I think we still learn something, don't we? We still learn that Usyk can do against Chisora what he has done against cruiserweights in the past.
That's exactly it. He's more than a gatekeeper, Chisora. He's a good world level heavyweight who's got good wins and he's been in with everyone. And seeing how Usyk deals with that is going to be a good yardstick, good barometer for what is going to come, which, to be honest, for him, the target is Joshua, Fury, whoever's got the belt. So it's one of them. If you can't beat Chisora well, then forget it.
Chisora is something of an enigma, George. I mean, as you say, you think he's older than he is because he's been around forever, really. But he really only seems to have knuckled down, at least in the physical sense, with the conditioning, since he sort of teamed up with David Haye. Why do you think it's sort of left it so late?
I mean, I don't know, heavyweights don't like doing conditioning work. I think he's now trained with a bunch of guys that just don't let him off the hook. You know, they make him work for every, in every moment. That's part of the, and he's got himself in that mindset where he's willing to do it, Chisora. Maybe there was no one around him before that could, you know, get that out of him. He will show up super fit, I think, and he does have a great engine now for a big guy. You know, when his last fight against David Price, he showed up and he was heavier because he probably felt being heavier would suit him against Price. And I think it did. And David Price, you know, he's not known for his conditioning anyway. So if your conditioning is going to suffer because you're coming in heavier, that's a risk worth taking in that sort of fight. But I think he'll probably be lighter against Usyk. He'll be super fit. He'll be up for it. He's main event on a pay-per-view card. You know, it doesn't matter that we're in lockdown and it's not in an arena or a stadium or whatnot. This is a big fight for him. He'll be no doubt aware of the task at hand and Usyk's ability. But I think Usyk's, you know, a bit of a puncher as well, and that'll be interesting to see. I think what his punch effect will be on these big guys who absorb shots so well, you know, because, you know, yeah, he lost a few rounds against Bellew, but as a boxer, you're looking at it going, I can see the bigger picture here, you know, and you could see who was working that much harder at those stages, even though he was marginally dropping those rounds, he was well within his comfort zone. And you always felt that as soon as he decides the times to pick it up, he's going to pick it up. It's going to have an effect. And it did against Barry that night where, you know, there was a lot of pressure on Tony's shoulders. So, you know, being at home as well, and it felt like he was all of a sudden, as an underdog, win the fight. That might have caught up with him a little bit, suffocated him. But yeah, back to Usyk, who, great wins against in the cruiserweight division. I was there watching him, win the World Boxing Super Series. I think he's one of the best heavyweights in the world, one of the best pound-for-pound fighters in the world. I'd put him as the best pound-for-pound heavyweight out there, even though I wouldn't pick him as the best heavyweight out there. Maybe they should have another weight division. You know, that was, again, another reason I was gutted I wasn't on last week. So whether he's just not big enough to compete with the likes of Tyson Fury, maybe not even Anthony Joshua, but the rest of them heavies, not super heavies. I think he's light years ahead. And if he's head screwed on, then I think you'll see a smart performance this weekend against Chisora. And although Chisora can march you down, can gas you out, can make you work, can come from behind, can hurt you definitely, I think he's going to be taking a lot of punches against Usyk because he's a smart fighter. So it'd be really, really, really interesting. But who knows? Who knows? They are heavyweights. Strange one, as you say. It's a fight you got to pay for. I would pay for it. But at the same time, it's a non-world title fight. It's there is a niggling element to it, but that's boxing right now, I think it's a good fight, a very good fight in the heavyweight division.
So unsurprisingly, Alexander Usyk is 8-1 on to beat Derek Chisora, who is 5-1. If you think Usyk stops Chisora, you can get evens or 6-5 on points. Chisora 11-2 to win by stoppage. I cannot imagine he will possibly. Well, I can't imagine he'll win, but certainly won't be going the distance.
It's got to be the bet, isn't it? Usyk points. Maybe even if there is a special to get off the floor and win. A bit like his old mate Loma against Linares. Just a flash knockdown at some point. Like, whoa, back on his feet. And then, like George says, I think Chisora is going to tire down the stretch and just end up chasing shadows a bit and just getting picked off. I don't see him getting stopped, though. He's super tough. Look, he's made of something else. He's got a granite chin. But Dillian White did, so who knows? But I think Usyk points got me the bet.
Well, it's all on record now, so we'll come back to that next week.
Just before we jump on, I'm going to go Usyk stoppage then, just to be different and just to.
You're on a good run.
A caveat in there. What's the odds again, Usyk stoppage?
Evens.
Evens, I like that.
You're on a good run, George. You picked Bredis to win over Dorticos. Yep. You picked Lopez to win. You must be absolutely caked down there in West London. You must be living a cigar on at all times.
I'm waiting to get major deal. I'm going to set up an app and you come and follow me and I'll do some predictions. I mean, the second I won't get one right now. I reckon I'll probably Usyk stoppage. You might end up getting stopped and I've embarrassed myself. But no, even money, Usyk stoppage. Don't write this off because don't underestimate his power and his ability to put the shots together. And Chisora's got a delicate mindset, and if he's getting totally outscored, I'm not saying he would ever give up, but would he have to throw caution to the wind and walk onto a couple of big shots?
Talking me into thinking he could get DQ'd for like a headbutt or something, if he loses his rag a bit. Get your money on that. That's what George Groves' official prediction. Derek Chisora, DQ.
That's your prediction, Derek. You still got that one.
if like Derek, you think Usyk could indeed be knocked down and then bounce back up to win, that is 5-1 with Betfair. As I said, we will come back next week. We need to start having forfeits, either forfeits or rewards.
Tell you what you should do is lose that Mayweather-McGregor canvas behind you and make a little league table. Although you haven't made one prediction since we started this over a year ago, so you need to start putting your money on your mouth if you had any.
Well, I'll take that on the chin, like your punches. I think Usyk sort of 8, 9, 10.
Mm.
There you go. I have nothing to hide. No, nobody.
I don't have enough. Me and Deg both pitched something to him, and
yeah,
I know who's yeah, I know who's more viable to the show. Yeah. Anyway, I don't want to get into a pay-per-view discussion, but this card is not a pay-per-view card. Whether these fights, headline fights, can only be made by putting it on pay-per-view, that's one thing. But the rest of the card, for me, disappointing. But Lee Selby is in a fight, at least by the odds, the most 50-50 fight against George Kambosos. Selby 10-11 with Betfair and Kambosos 5-6. And I believe the winner will be the first mandatory for the new unified lightweight champion, Teofimo Lopez. Selby, of course, moved up since his glorious days at featherweight, last out against Ricky Burns. Surely, Deck, this is a last chance saloon, at least to be a player on the world level.
Yeah, I think he's revitalised a bit, as much as you can tell without him actually fighting. But I think, yeah, I think he's had a bit of a transformation. Obviously, he's gone up in weight. His brother's retired. So, you know, he's sort of flying the flag on his own. I used to love the featherweight Selby. I remember when he beat Gradovich for the title. I think that even won the IBF Performance of the Year or something. You know, he was really, really brilliant at times at that weight. It'd be interesting to see what he does at lightweight. Obviously, he looked so lanky and thin for feather. So it'd be interesting to see how he's grown into that. And like you say, he becomes a mandatory for Lopez's title, which, to be honest, is probably then therefore going to be vacant. So whoever, it's almost like a final eliminator, this one. Whoever wins it, the likelihood is they're going to fight for a vacant lightweight world title in their next fight. So odds couldn't be, or rather the stakes couldn't be higher for either of them. I really like the fight. A lot of unknown and intangible and questions about Selby and what he's going to do at this weight. So, yeah, I really love the fight. Again, I don't think it bolsters the idea that this is a pay-per-view fight or a pay-per-view card, but in these days, it's sort of everything's gone out the window because I don't think we could have had an Usyk Chisora, well, we couldn't have on a normal rights fee. So it's one of them where it's like, if you want to see it, you've got to pay for it. And it's sort of, that's sort of the way of the world now anyway. We've done enough moaning on the show. It's hard to moan about. I paid 10 quid for a stream the other day at 4 o'clock in the morning. So, you know, you sort of just, you have to cough up these days, don't you? It's not great. And it's damaging for the sport in the long run, because how many people are actually going to watch it? You know, 15 million people watch Ben against Eubank rematch. You know, that's why the sport was bigger then. It's marginalised now, and the people who still care will pay. But with that being said, I think they're going to enjoy Selby Kambosos, but who knows, we'll see. I think, yeah, it's a big fight, stakes are high, and I think Selby's got something left.
We will find out. Also on that card, Dave Allen takes on Christopher Lovejoy, who is a sort of late replacement. I actually thought the Christian Hammer fight, which was originally scheduled, not actually a bad fight, to be fair. Hammer
got COVID though, right? Hammer tested positive for COVID.
So he says.
Well, I haven't seen the test myself, but I think just one on this Lovejoy fella, I think he's the guy. Can you remember? I believe it was before the first Wilder fight, or maybe Schwartz or Wallin, one of those American fights that Fury had. During his training camp, there was this guy shouting off his mouth the whole time saying, I'll come and beat you up or whatever. Fury just accepted, like, this guy just needed to shut him up. He's so annoying. Come and have a spar. And he, like, stopped him in less than around 30 seconds. First shot he hit him with, sent him packing. I mean, that doesn't tell you anything about Dave Allen's chances, but I believe that's the same guy. So he's not totally new to British heavyweights. Dave Allen looks on it fitness-wise. He's obviously been sparring Usyk. Lovejoy's come out of nowhere, no preparation. So, yeah, I guess Allen will win by stoppage. But interesting little backstory then. Fury doesn't like him anyway.
Does he like anyone? Also on that card, the rearranged world title fight between Savannah Marshall and Hannah Rankin. So I guess that is a little boost to the card after that fight was cancelled a couple of weeks ago after Peter Fury contracted COVID-19. I said we'd keep the morning to a minimum. Well, I didn't, but also on Halloween, Leo Santa Cruz takes on Javonta Davis. Now, let me get this right. The fight is at super featherweight. So they have to make £130. However, there is also a lightweight title on the line, which is ridiculous, George, right?
Yeah. Javante Davis, is he a multi-weight world champion now, as in still holds both belts at the weight? Like, or is it Santa Cruz that's lightweight? And I'm trying to work out quite how it happens. What's the point of it? the weight divisions is so you are one weight division. It got me thinking. I was trying to think back as it happened before. I didn't have a chance to research it properly. I'm sure, like, when they bring in a new belt, was Roy Jones like middle and super middleweight world champion at one point?
I'm pretty sure Mayweather boxed for like light middle and welterweight, like defended his welterweight titles and fought at, like, maybe in the Cotto fight or something like that. I can seem to remember it happening then, but Mayweather's a bit of an anomaly. It's just strange it's happening now.
Yeah, well, they both, I mean, as long as they both got to make the same weight.
Davis is the regular champion with the WBA at lightweight. So it's not even a proper belt, so to speak. So it's that. And then Leo Santa Cruz is the super champ at super feather. So that's how the cookie crumbles to those two.
Right.
Even if you let them keep their respective belts, don't put them both on a line. Just try and pretend that it's just for the super featherweight. Like, if you want to let Davis keep his lightweight belt but fight at super featherweight, fine. But don't be advertising it as a, I don't even know what they're advertising it as, a two-weight, two-division something. It's just not. Sorry.
It's a shame, though, isn't it? Because Davis is like, how long ago was that he knocked out Pedraza? Amazing performance. I think it was on the James the Gale Badu Jack on the card. So ages ago, he should be an absolute superstar, that guy. A little wrecking ball, southpaw, exciting, amazing backstory, looks the part, vicious. He's not a superstar. It's like, what's going on? He's promoted by Mayweather Promotions. Like, what's the crack? Why is he fighting Leo Santa Cruz? Like, what? There's so many good fights out there for him, and there has been for years. I just can't get my head around it. It's so sad, like, because he's not getting any younger. He's been an amateur since he was about five. So it's not like he's got longevity on his side. It's just like, and then they only fight twice a year, and he fights Leo Santa Cruz, who's like Teofimo Lopez said, you know, he's 122 pounds. He's a super bantamweight. Davis is not a super bantamweight. It's just so annoying, isn't it, that we wait so long for these guys to see them, and it's just not, it's not a fight we want to see, really. And then for two belts, it's just the whole thing is a bit of a farce, really. But yeah, I'm not staying up for it. I don't know if you boys are.
No, I wouldn't imagine so. I mean, I guess you talk about Mayweather, but when it comes to protecting your own, he's passing on plenty of knowledge, isn't he?
Davis is a street kid from Baltimore. He's not going to be sitting there going, oh, I don't fancy this fella. I reckon he might beat me, actually. He doesn't care one bit. It's obviously promotional problems, and for some reason he's not getting his own way, and there's been all sorts of spats with his promoter and whatever else. It's just another example of the actual fighter and the fighting being not even secondary, but, you know, so far down the list of what actually matters, that it just has an impact on his career. I guess he must be rich. He would hope that he must be rich by now, based on his career. But who knows? Maybe he's not. I would say that he certainly hasn't maximised his potential. And I don't think this fight would do anything. But it's going to be vaguely interesting to see how he deals with a volume puncher like Leo Santa Cruz, even if he's not really the same sort of size. But I don't know.
Yeah. One, two. Ooh, we'll watch the
highlights. I don't want to moan too much. I don't want to be the Monday morning moan.
Two great fighters. I can't wait to see it.
To be fair, though, George, they are two great fighters. Leo Santa Cruz, like, look what he did with Frampton. Like, he was, you know, he's such a great fighter to watch, but it may be against opponents that are his size. And Davis, I don't know, he had all sorts of problems making weight in the past. I remember, he missed the weight a couple of times for the Walsh fight, didn't he, with the copper box. Like, he boxed Liam Walsh at the copper box, like, on the sort of, in the armpit of East London. It's just mad. What was he doing there? The whole thing is weird. His whole career is just bizarre.
I've boxed out the copper box. All right?
I was there.
We've all been there.
George, I was there. I was sat in that changing room afterwards waiting to interview you.
Thinking,
after that.
What are we all doing here? I know, I was thinking the same, but we have to do it, all right?
I live in Hackney, so it's great for me. I can walk there. Perfect. Get more. I tell you what, if Davis boxed all his fights at the Cobb Box, I'd be a happy man.
Yeah, true.
Well, real praise for the Copper Box. Also on Halloween, we should mention that, especially in light of the opening up, let's say, of the pound for pound list, Inoue takes on Jason Maloney. I mean, no one sort of picks Inoue, I don't think, as the number one deck, but he's certainly obviously, he's made some sort of... but he's certainly in the picture, and, you know, you can imagine coming through this one, 2021 could be big.
Yeah, I've seen a few people put Inoue number one pound for pound, and you can see why. He's, I believe, three-weight world champion already after 17 or 19 fights, whatever it is. Knocked out almost everyone. Put away some good, long-standing champions as well along the way. I think he's in the conversation. I don't think beating Maloney makes him number one for people who don't already think he is, but he's one of those guys we just got to enjoy while he's here. And how big can he go? Because he's a small guy, but it's a bit like Roman Gonzalez. Start small and just keep going until someone catches up with you. But he's so exciting to watch. And Maloney is no mug either. I think it's going to be a good fight. But we said that before. I mean, I remember we said that before the Piano fight, and look what he did to him. Just the monster, they call him. And that's about right.
And another shout out, I guess, the World Boxing Super Series, who brought him sort of to the screens of far more people than had maybe seen him before, often with the fighters from Asia. We don't necessarily get to see them so much. But George, presumably you agree in the conversation for pound for pound.
Yeah, Inoue, I think he's just... he's up there in my pound for pound list, to be honest. I think he's brilliant. Just frightening power, you know, just frightening, unbelievable, game-changing power. Even to the point where I'm struggling now to think about his other attributes, because I feel like that's such a thing. Three-weight world champion now, as you say, and brilliant. I'd stick him up there. Pound. I don't know if he would go at number one, but certainly top five, maybe even top three. A very, very good fighter.
So plenty of action next weekend, which means plenty to discuss. The following Monday, just finally before we go, looking slightly further ahead, December 5th is said to be perhaps the most stacked night of boxing this year. And actually on December 4th, Friday night, Matchroom have Billy Joe Saunders against Martin Murray, they've put on the Friday to avoid a clash on the Saturday night with Tyson Fury's homecoming, which seems to be set now for the Royal Albert Hall against, well, we don't know, but likely Ajit Kabayel or Carlos Takam, seems to be the two names being banded about. But on the other side of the Atlantic that night, we have Luke Campbell against Ryan Garcia, which looks set to be moved to the afternoon in America. And we also have Danny Garcia against Errol Spence, which will then presumably be late in America. Normal time in America, so early hours here. So if they get it right, we could be watching boxing for about 12 hours. If they get it wrong, we could be seeing some of the biggest names in the sport clashing with each other.
Yeah, I'm guessing they're going to get it wrong as well, because we're talking about different promoters and different broadcasters. It's not like they're going to come up with a deal, is it? Like, yeah, the quotes from De La Hoya about the moving the Ryan Garcia-Luke Campbell fight so it doesn't clash with Danny Garcia and Errol Spence was like, that was great news for Brits, because it meant that it's going to be on at, I don't know, it could be on at like 10 o'clock. If you do the maths, the afternoon would be like 2 o'clock-ish, I guess, on the West Coast, and then that's 8 hours difference, so there's 10 o'clock at night, which will probably be about the time Tyson Fury is. But then saying that, Tyson Fury probably won't start till 11, knowing those BT shows, so actually it might work out pretty well. And two great fights, two good, I love the Campbell fight. Fury, you've got to expect it to be a bit of a procession. I mean, if it's Kabayel or Rivas or Takam, decent heavyweights, none of them on Fury's level. but it gets him out again, doesn't it? And it gets, as long as he comes through unscathed, uncut, and with his hands working, then it does pave the way, so they say, for the Joshua fight. So it's good to see that in December. And we sort of always expected a bit of a logjam towards the end of this year. Once they sorted out how we can box in COVID, that was always going to happen. That December looks particularly busy, particularly that weekend, then Joshua the following weekend, then it's Christmas after that, and then it's 2021 when it's all rainbows again for everyone across the nation, or maybe not. Maybe it's third wave by then, who knows? But December the 4th and 5th is going to be busy.
And even Errol Spence, of course, who he posted on Instagram a couple of weeks ago just pictures of himself after his crash and his car. I mean, physically, you assume, outwardly at least, you know, he feels fine. But psychologically, George, coming back from something that, at least from what we can see, could have killed him, that adds a different dimension to a fight which you maybe a year ago or before his crash anyway, you might have thought would be routine.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? Who knows? It's a terrible, terrible car crash. You know, lucky. I mean, he was lucky to survive it. Yeah, that's what the general consensus is. And yeah, maybe that's put him a different perspective on life. Who knows? You know, maybe don't take stuff for granted so much. And maybe that's a good thing. Maybe it's a bad thing for boxing. Maybe you should be that slightly more less cautious with certain things. But on a physical point of things, as long as it hasn't, I don't know if there was like a full release of, you know, the injuries that he sustained during the car crash, or if everything is perfectly fine, or if there are things that have been covered up and kept away and that are now having an effect on him, who knows? So, but obviously great to have him back. Phenomenal fighter, great fighter, entertaining fighter, exciting fighter. Hopefully it's, I don't know, it's been a, you know, a thing that he can look back on now and say, well, thank God, there's a reason I'm here today and make the most of it. So, yeah, but after a fantastic weekend of boxing, Campbell out in the States against Garcia, which is a tough fight, a real tough fight. I mean, old friend of mine, Campbell, and I do feel sorry for him to a certain extent that he fights himself into a mandatory position. He has to fight the unified world champion, Lomachenko, is his other side of his mandatory. Now he's fighting Garcia, who looks like he could be the real deal. You know, a great fighter. He's really young, hungry, famous. He's got a lot of momentum behind him. I know Eddie Hearn and DAZN are very excited about him, and many other people in the States. So Campbell's got a tough task ahead of him. But I think it'll be a great fight to watch. And then, Fury back in action at the Albert Hall. What's the details of that then? So are they going to allow some fans in? Because I know Albert Hall was a little bit lenient. Is that right? So it's at the Albert Hall, yeah?
Looks like it. I'm sure the Royal Albert Hall has had, I say fans, people in for regular shows. There have been some pictures on social media, certainly, that have caused an outcry when nobody can go to sporting events, but they can go and watch shows. I mean, I guess the fan base is slightly different.
Yeah, I think it's TBC, and the sporting is different to the cultural, I guess you would say, like comedy shows, you can get people in. And if maybe it'd be comedy, maybe if Fury tells a few jokes or sings on his ring walk again, that would actually count, and then we can get some fans in there. But as far as I can tell, it's not going to be for sale as of yet, ticket wise, you know, still TBC, but that would be nice, wouldn't it? And that would be a good little loophole, stick it on at the Albert Hall or at a theatre, and then you can get some fans in. That'd be great for everyone.
It would just be nice for me personally, just to see a few more faces in the crowd, just to soften the noise that you can hear of the punches going in. I'm sure, you know, probably even the fighters can hear the commentators chatting away from, you know, safe social distancing rules from across the TV studio or whatnot. So, you know, if you see some of the shows that are on in, you know, in Russia and places like that, and they're not massive arenas, but there are people in the crowd. And I've never been so excited to see that. So yeah, it'd be great if at the Albert Hall, obviously, you can get, I think the capacity there is 3,000 for boxing. It might be, I wouldn't expect that, but if there was like say 200 300 people in there, evenly spaced out, may make for some sort of entertainment and add to the the feel of live boxing.
If they do have a crowd, I assume there would be a 10 p.m. curfew still. So then maybe that even is another sort of thing to take into consideration when they're planning.
What's the 10 p.m. curfew then? Is that just for hospitality, as in like bars and clubs and drinks and restaurants?
Yeah, but
there might be a little loophole there for, sports venues.
Well, I think if that would mean that the main event would have to start by 9:15, so we might as well write it off now. That hasn't happened. I don't think in the recorded history of organised boxing pugilism, I don't think we've ever had that. Certainly not on TV.
Don't worry, it'll be on pay-per-view, so you can...
Good point. Good.
Anyway, hopefully sense will prevail and somehow we will work it out so that we can watch all three fights separately and live. That, of course, is December. That is for another week. Thank you for joining us this week, and we'll be back next week. There's loads to review. Worth tuning in. We'll see you then.